Thank you guys. Thanks for having me down here. I'm a grad student at Portland State University, working on my master's degree. I'm also a research assistant there. I've been there for almost 10 years working on different lake projects, and worked on Silkus Lake and a project here before, and I'm working with the Siuslaw Watershed Council and some other partners on getting a harmful algal bloom monitoring program going. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit, and then also talk about some other lake-related projects that will be coming up pretty soon. So first off, I'm going to talk about this drinking water protection grant that we got several years ago, and then talk about some of these related projects that we're working on, the Atlas of Oregon Lakes that was mentioned earlier, and another project that we should be getting going here this coming winter. So first off, talk about this HAMS project, the harmful algal bloom monitoring, and all the cyanobacteria bloom problems that we've had primarily in Silkus Lake down in this area. Prompted getting a monitoring program going, tying in with the volunteer efforts that are going on in this area already. The title of the project is Monitoring Assessment and Action Plan for Harmful Algal Bloom Risk and Nutrient Loads in Coastal Lakes. Does nutrient loads affect how big the blooms can be in the lake, or one of the big parts? One of the big parts of this project is to develop a drinking water source protection plan that includes this lake monitoring toolbox, which I'll talk about in a little bit. The main point of it is to set up an effective long-term lake monitoring program. We've got a lot of partners in this project, including folks at Wolhink and Silkus Lake, the Honeyman State Park. The Dune City folks have been very involved in a lot of the work that's gone in both those lakes. Hasita Water District, Eel Lake, 10 Mile Water District, and DEQ and the Soil and Watershed Council, and also the DHS has been involved somewhat in the state drinking water program. So just an overview of the tasks that are involved in this project. The first task that was involved was to convene an initial scoping meeting, just kind of going over what the program is about and letting people know what will be happening. So back in 2010, some of you folks were here, and we had an initial scoping meeting. We just talked about what will be happening. Myself and Mark Sitzma, we developed a lake monitoring toolbox, which I'll go over in the next slide, and with feedback from the Watershed Council on that one. We started some data collection training. We went on one initial trip down to 10 Mile Lake and showed some of the routine lake water quality monitoring techniques that were developed within this lake monitoring toolbox, and some of the data management techniques, which is a huge part of this whole project, and always one of the trickiest parts of dealing with any monitoring is what do you do the data with the data, and how do you make sure it's collected in a proper manner. The other tasks, I'll come back to this at the end, but there's been some lake sampling that's gone on, but without this complete lake monitoring toolbox, that's been delayed a little bit, so that's going to be coming up later this summer. Get some of the folks on Clear, Eel, Wolhink, and Silkus out sampling. Once we collect this data, I want to know what it's all about, so we can do another meeting and talk about what it all means. And then the last parts of this, developing the surveillance and response action plan, the Siuslaw Watershed Council is going to be leading these parts, and I'm going to be assisting with any technical questions they come up with. Also the same with the harmful algal bloom monitoring plan. Anything you guys want to add about that? Or?
No. changes in their program due to funding stuff that will affect our, you know, what plan we do, how we respond to it, how we limit who we report to, and so we need to make sure we tailor whatever plan we develop to what they have available to.
The last task is just to keep an eye out for new funding for keeping programs like this going, and it's always tricky to do, and one of the ways we set up this program is for it to be able to withstand changes in funding, to go really simple, to be able to scale up if new funding becomes available. So a little more detail about the lake monitoring toolbox. It's basically a set of methods for collecting and managing data. We want the data, it's set up so the data is of high quality, so it's useful to DEQ, other people who are interested in it, like EPA or other agency folks or local people also, it's useful. We want it to be collected in a consistent manner, so for instance, if somebody takes a SecuDisc reading with a viewer tube versus not a viewer tube, and after 10 years it switches, that you look at the data, you're not going to see it. You're going to see a change in the water clarity. Is that going to be just because of the methods you use? So we want to have the same method so everything is comparable over time. The toolbox is flexible enough so it can address the specific monitoring goals. Like, for instance, a group is interested in a particular arm of the lake, focus efforts in that part of the lake to see if there's like sediments or problems coming in from that particular sub-watershed. And again, we want to make sure that this toolbox is flexible to adapt to changes in funding and personnel or organizational goals. So to create this flexibility, we created different modules into the toolbox. The main one is this core long-term module, and it's very simple. Not much there, and it's for two reasons. One's cheap, and with it being cheap and easy to do, we can have that data stream coming. And one of the, like I said before, the data is one of the hardest parts to deal with in terms of making sure the correct data is collected and it gets stored right. And so when we keep the data simple, that kind of makes that data stream flow smoothly. So when we start collecting more complex data, it's just a lot easier once you get that simple data stream going. So the module is just SecuDisc transparency, water temperature, water level, and plus any observations of what's going on. And another function of this core module is just gets people out on the lake, somebody out on the lake routinely. Silpcoos and Wolvink, there's already this process going on, but it's just good to have people out on the lake. You know, you notice things that, for myself in particular, I'd only get down here once in a while, wouldn't notice certain things because it's just not possible to get out as often as we would like. The next module, if there becomes more funding, and for this project in particular, all these modules are going to be implemented so the volunteers can see how it works and how it can be scaled up or scaled down. The enhanced long-term module, these are typical limnological parameters, dissolved oxygen, chlorophyll, total phosphorus, total nitrogen, turbidity, and then the dominal algal composition. So just this is still very simple stuff, but it gets a little bit more information, more useful information. One of the really important ones is this harmful algal bloom module, and down at 10 Mile Lake, we played around with some of the techniques for getting at cyanotoxin concentrations with the cyanotoxin kits. And also collecting samples for sending them in for algal species enumeration. So all this, one last one is a nutrient budget support module. Liz mentioned the TMDL process. A lot of that is dealing with nutrient budgets and streams and lakes. So this module makes it easy for a volunteer group to add supplementary data to DQ or whoever's doing the nutrient budget model. So it's mainly dissolved nutrients in addition to all the other total nutrient information. And again, data management is very, very important. We haven't settled on a definite method of dealing with the data, how to store it in the database. There's three different ways we're looking at right now. The state of Oregon uses a LAKESAR database, but they're also talking about going several different ways. These are online databases that each data collection has a set of information that you need to, metadata that you need to collect along with all the other data. So it's really useful because it gets all the data in the same standardized format. So everybody knows what the data is, and then also other computer programs, if you want to do some online plotting or anything like that, you can just write some code so it can pull up that data. So it's very useful to everybody in that way. So we're coming out in discussions with DEQ about which direction we want to go with this. And we're developing some tools that will make it very easy for the volunteers to not have to know all the background behind the scenes stuff about how to deal with databases and data management. We'll just have a field data sheet and then either a simplified online data entry form or possibly that data form would go to the Watershed Council, and the Watershed Council would add that information in. And then there will be back-end access to this database too, so it'll be very easy to get the information out. You won't have to know databases to be able to get the information back out. So back to this, the project task. I covered most of this already, but there's a lot of this project that's upcoming that we're going to be dealing with later this summer and into the fall and winter. So just want to touch on a couple other lake-related projects and things that are going on around. We've developed this online atlas of Oregon lakes. It's up in the upper right-hand corner there. There's a page from the 1985 Atlas of Oregon Lakes, which has been very useful to a lot of people, a lot of information. So if you go to this Atlas of Oregon Lakes site, you can get the old information, and we've been adding in a lot of different layers of new information. For instance, if you click on Wohink Lake, you can pull up water quality plots. This is just one example down in the bottom right-hand corner. And the hope is that eventually all the data, new data that's collected by the Dune City folks or whoever else, is going to go into this online database, whether it's the one of the three that I mentioned before, and that information can automatically populate a graph, such as these box plots or time series plots. So there's really easy access to data, and also be able to download the data. Raw data if you want to do any other types of plots at this site too. There's some one-page printable bathymetric maps that you can get, general basin statistics, photos. There's a way to submit photos for particular lakes. So there's a wide range of interest that can be supplied by this website. One of the things that we are going to do this winter is present invasive species data on the Atlas of Oregon Lakes. This is the Oregon IMAP website. This is a screenshot of that, and this is a Nature Conservancy site, and they basically have a database where they collect records of invasive species throughout the state, and they only present it in terms of presence or absence by county, because they don't want people to go to a certain location and be able to find an invasive species and move it around somewhere else. But we're going to be able to present that on a lake-by-lake basis. So you'll be able to click on Woheng Lake. The list will come up of all the invasive species that are present in that particular lake, the date that they were recorded, who recorded them, and all kinds of other information about that sighting. The Center for Lakes and Reservoirs at Portland State, where I work, we also have a database of native plant species, so that information is also going to be presented. So you click on Woheng Lake, and you should be able to get all the data occurrences for different plant species. Another project that we have a new professor at Portland State. She's got a limnological background. She's going to be starting up an Oregon Lake Watch program. The Oregon Lake Watch was present in Oregon back in the 80s or 90s and early 2000s, and went away because of lack of funding. She's kind of bringing it back. It's going to be mainly focused on aquatic invasive species detections, and then a little bit more information on very simple water quality parameters like water clarity and temperature. This winter, she's going to be designing that project, figuring out the details of how that's going to work, and recruiting volunteers, and hopefully some of you guys will be interested in joining up on that. And the sampling for that project will start in the summer of 2013. And this crowd map, this is something that we put up temporarily, and I encourage you guys to go and check it out. It's a type of thing where you can submit a report for any weird type of thing you see in the lake. If you see what you think is a bloom, you can take a picture, click on the submit a report, and you can type a little bit in there about what you see. Post your picture if you have that capability with the camera or your cell phone or whatever. And then that information will go to the Watershed Council. When it comes to me also, we can check and make sure that it's somewhat valid information, and then we can make it live to everybody. So this is just a way of sharing information close to real time. And depending on how this works, we could keep on using this, or we could just fold this into a Oregon Lake Watch or even the Atlas of Oregon Lakes project. So ideally, it'd be nice to fold it into the Atlas of Oregon Lakes, so that can kind of be a one-stop shop. We can link to that information, link to this, the Watershed Council's webpage, or anything related to a particular lake. Here's my contact information and a few websites that I encourage you to go to. Any questions?
Hey, Rich.
Yeah.
Before people ask questions, since your presentation has so many great web resources, I'll have it on my computer, and what I'll try to do, if it's all right with you, is I'll put up a link to share the presentation. And that way people can copy those. If it doesn't work that way, I'll put up the link. So we have a new program that should allow us to be able to share the presentation pretty seamlessly.
So. And I have a few copies of the toolbox here. It's a draft version, so I only have three copies, but I can, if any of you are interested in getting your information, I can send you a link for the actual document, but you're welcome to take these.
And some of you may make you take one home. Thank you, everyone. Yep, there. Questions for Rich?
So how many samplers or people sampling kind of per lake you can like, some of the more general types of things that are being done?
One is all you really need. I mean, it's nice to have somebody with a boat because it's just easier. But it can be done off a dock for some of the more simpler parameters. But one is all we really need. But, we have... The ideal is like the Dune City Watership Council. You know, they have different people that can go out and big interest. So, yeah. Plant monitoring, that's going to be a little bit more involved, the invasive plant monitoring, so probably a couple people out for that.
Other questions?
Brief question. About 5 years ago, Councilman Kohler and Dune City and myself took pictures of the shoreland, every bit of it around Silkus and around Wolink Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be of any interest?
Yeah, we've got some technical people that I could try and get to put that up on the Atlas of Oregon Lakes, you know?
I would think after 5 or 10 years you might be able to see a difference in growth.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be fascinating to take that, put them together, and then do the same thing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and do it at a set interval, so that could be really interesting to see. And also if you compare that with some of the aerial photo data, that could be, but...
Yeah, that's a great idea. That'd be kind of like the Google Street View thing, you know? But it'd be nice to have like a Google Lake View or sort of Google, but the same idea.
One other thing, when we first started, Mark Chandler, back in 2002, I said we could get a ride around the lake and still involved. But anyway, one of the things we did, Chris Castelli, DSO, had satellite photographs taken of both Wohink and Silkus. And he had them done as a topo map as well as photograph. They should be available from DSL.
Oh, okay. I'll look
there are hard copies of it available through Kohler because I had them there in my way, so I gave it to him and put them on the wall somewhere.
Yeah, anything I find, I'll try and make it available. And
if you can't find that, let me know through Mark Chandler.
Okay. That's what we're really hoping for this Atlas of Lord and Lake, is that, you know, you can come and find all the information that's available for a particular lake right in one spot, or at least links to go somewhere else to find it. Yeah.
Have you and Mark talked about as funding strategy possibility of, since there's a big stir right now about one of the toxins by the cyanobacteria, the BMAA toxin, and that's been linked now to a possibility among a lot of researchers as affecting neurodegenerative diseases. So there's a huge medical need for understanding that potential toxin. You know, if this is a drinking water source in Silkus, maybe it attracts some researchers or some money to assess the toxins at a higher level because of the neurodegenerative connection.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if you guys talked about that at all. But
I'll bring it up. So, yeah, going at the health route would probably be very good.
Yeah.
Looking deep on it. One of the sources of funding that we would like to tap into at a low level, kind of ongoing, are the boat tag funds, which is where some of the Oregon Lake Watch money is coming from. Especially they're very interested in the invasive species.
Yeah.
So that's kind of that is a pretty good thing.
Robert, is anybody at NOAA in the Pacific Northwest looking at these toxins?
I suspect so, but I don't know who, so I don't know.
Because they might, you know, make an action to potential research. You know.
Other questions? Great. Thank you.
Thank you.